Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. This is a DLive only stream and this is with Happer Perspective. Now, Happer Perspective is the name of an Instagram channel that has come and gone numerous times, but also a Telegram channel now. And what are you on Twitter? You've definitely got a YouTube channel now as well.
No, I've been blocked from Twitter too many times. I was on there in 2016 and I just got blocked from, I was suspended. So.
Right. Okay. Well, I've linked people, I will link people now to your link tree.
Perfect.
So it's got everything that they need to know is right there. So people can find Mr. Perspective on his various outlets. And of course, he is on Telegram. That's one of his main things. Mm. And of course, everyone should be on Telegram. So if you're not, now would be a good time to rectify that terrible oversight. So I'll just link everyone to Telegram desktop so you can get it installed and then you can keep up to date with all of your favorite content creators. All right, so welcome, Happer Perspective, to Millennial. And would you like to introduce yourself to people, or would you like us to have a something to calm you down first? Cause I know you're a wee bit worked up, so maybe we could talk about the American shopping mall.
I'm new at this.
We were talking about that just before we went on air, about the sort of idea of the American shopping mall. It's quite a nice thing. But anyway, okay, you go for it and introduce yourself.
We'll get to the shopping mall. That would be a good segue after I introduce myself. I would say that I've been a fan of yours since the migrant crisis. I came to you trying to understand what was going on. And it was very frustrating for me as, you know, a mixed race guy, you know, who's half racially European. And I was trying to make sense of it. And I've been, you know, following your channel for years and watching all of your millennial live streams. And, you know, when you stopped doing videos for a while, there was like a bit of a hiatus. So I joined the Instagram community because I was looking for people to talk to, and I built up an audience just kind of just sharing memes. And, you know, now I have a blog and I have a channel that I'm going to start adding more videos to. And as a mixed race guy, given from what I've seen going on in the world, I felt this sudden need to sort of come out and, you know, speak up to give my perspective on things. And so that's basically it, really. We could go into details about what I think, but I would suffice it to say that my beliefs about the world are in line with people like you and, you know, Apollonian Germ and even, you know, Thulean Perspective and, you know, Frody and so on and so forth. I can't hear you. Did you say something?
So I guess people would want to know what kind of background, mm-hmm. I mean, do you come from, and how does this inform? Did you grow up in America? Did you grow up somewhere in Asia, or what? What is your, and also what is your knowledge of, go for that first, and then I'll ask you another question.
So I grew up in America on the East Coast, and I actually grew up with a lot of diversity. And I grew up around all kinds of people. And, you know, a lot of the diversity it wasn't like the ghetto. It was, you know, well-to-do, high IQ people from all racial backgrounds. So, you know, you would think I'd have this, like, you know, favorable view of multiracialism, but I really don't.
Do you think it works among that kind of affluent community, or not even there?
No, absolutely not. I grew up in a mostly white, you know, upper middle class neighborhood. There was a colorful family. I don't want to give too many details. I don't want to, you know, potentially dox myself, but, you know, there was some of my best friends were white growing up. Some of them were not. And the ones that were not, you know, they had good jobs. Their parents had good jobs, I mean, but, you know, they were good people, but they still had their sense of identity that they couldn't let go of. And I remember, like, I had a black friend and I would go over to his house, and he lived in my neighborhood. So his parents were doing pretty well, but there was all this like black nationalist stuff in their house. You know, there's a picture of like a framed picture of Union black soldiers killing Confederates and stuff. You know, they were a very like military family. And there were other things. I had like Filipino neighbors and, you know, people from all over. But what I realized very quickly growing up was that these weren't my people. And I say that as a mixed race person, but I've always felt a sort of affinity towards white people. But, you know, it was something just didn't seem right. So this idea that like you could have a multiracial high IQ society, it really makes me, when I hear about like people in the dissident right movement obsessed with IQ, I think back to that and it kind of makes me cringe.
Yes,
because
yes,
it's not IQ.
Yeah, there is this thing called IQ nationalism.
Where, yeah,
well, just bring all the high IQ people from Hong Kong and China.
All
and
these so Chinese and... people. Yeah, no, please don't. And I say that I'm half Chinese. Please don't do that. Please don't.
So would you say that in that situation where you've got like, well, how would you describe that situation that people are inviting up, like IQ nationalism? What would that result in, do you think?
You know, I think, sure, you could bring in high IQ Chinese people and Indian people, and, you know, maybe you would have more doctors. And, you know, Chinese people don't commit a lot of violent crime, and I don't think Indian people do as well. So on the surface, things would be honky-dory, right? But race is so much deeper than your physical well-being. You know, it's something much deeper than that. And that's something that I've always felt, but I started thinking about since I've been following your channel since 2015. And, you know, given the demographic crisis that Northern Europeans are facing, Northern Europeans specifically, I feel, I don't think that, because this diversity is really imposed on them, I don't think that that's right. And then that's where I kind of come into the picture, as, you know, because being mixed race, people like me, like I'm a good high IQ, I guess, law abiding, whatever, mixed race guy, that, you know, someone can point to me and say, oh, well, see, you know, this is the inevitable future. This is integration, you know, just mix and blend. Right. And I'm like, well, wait a second. I don't know about that. You know, careful with that one. So.
Do you think it would result in a sort of racial stratification where the Chinese would stick to themselves and the whites would stick to themselves and all that? Or is it worse than that?
Well, I think it would be worse than that. But, the, you know, the Chinese, what's interesting about the Chinese is how they are a high, relatively, I mean, it's, you know, it's debatable, but let's just say for the sake of argument, they're high IQ enough that they can maintain a first world, you know, let's just say the Sino people, you know, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, they can maintain a first world civilization. They are a civilizational people, and, you know, law abiding and all of that. But they're deeply ethnocentric people, whereas white people, not so much, you know. So that right there would cause a lot of issues. I think a lot of social and political friction. So even if you import, you know, if you're an IQ nationalist and you import like 50 million Chinese people, like that's not going to work, you know. And, you know, they can only assimilate into the superficial aspects of culture, depending on how you define culture. You know, you hear people like Lauren Southern say, well, what is white? My answer to that is, well, what is culture? You know,
is she still on that?
I don't want to get into it.
On that page,
I don't know. She's involved with the. I don't want to. I heard that she married a Hapa guy or like a Kwapa. He's like a quarter Asian. I don't know.
Is that the word?
I don't know. Apparently, it is.
I don't know. I don't know what the situation is, with her, yeah. But I have heard it. He's not white. That's or at least he's not, you know, fully stands what you call typically.
Right.
White.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know any more than that. But she, I think at one point that was, I mean, she was obviously one of the leading figures in the alt-light. Mm-hmm. And yes, one of their things was, well, what is white? But of course, that was also the civic, like the Sargonite sort of thing. I mean, he did specifically see.
Oh, I remember.
And I think he was just playing. I think he was just stalling and sort of arsing around, saying, well, but you need to be able to say what you mean by white. And that was when I infamously said, well, is Lawrence Fishburne black or is Lawrence Fishburne white or whatever? I mean, yes, there is that bunch of people who will, I don't know, it can be quite frustrating for us to be confronted with that. But I think
it's not for me.
It's possible that they genuinely think they're kind of helping us by forcing us to clarify things. I don't know, whatever. I really think that almost everyone on Earth knows what is meant by the term white person. Mm-hmm. It's not a mystery.
It would probably be better if we said like Indo-European, you know. I think that might, I mean, because if you look at it in terms of like a very long timeline, you know, because I mean, white is just short, as you've said, white is just shorthand for, you know, European and especially Northern European. It's not really just skin color, you know. I mean, my skin color is pretty light.
Yeah, exactly. It means genetically European to me.
Yes.
It doesn't include pale Japanese people.
Right.
And it, but the edge cases would be, I don't know, people from the very south of Europe. But yeah, I don't, it's to me, it's just not a mystery. And again, it's the thing about, you know, just because the border is soft and blurry doesn't mean that there aren't two sides, you know, something on either side of it.
Right. Where does red end and purple begin? You know, well, red exists and purple exists though. So see,
exactly. So it's kind of tedious.
Really much of a gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a gotcha at all. And I always sort of despair and look on at the person smugly thinking that they've got a gotcha. It's just tedious.
It really is.
Yeah. So, so you grew up in a multicultural, multiracial environment. Mm-hmm. At what point did it dawn on you that, at what point did it dawn on you that there was something not quite right about that? And also, was there a sense of an ancestral white culture, like we were saying about the shopping mall? Did that? Like, how did that all reconcile in your head as a child?
Well, I didn't have the language or the ideas to articulate it, but you know, I think even as children, we kind of naturally have these feelings viscerally that these people are more like us than those other people, and you know, so on and so forth. And there was issues with like boundaries and you know, being mixed race, I got the experience of being a non-white person as well as a white person. So I have both perspectives and I can look at it from different angles, you know, and I know what it's like to be on both ends, you know, for better or worse. But it just, I knew something, back then I couldn't articulate it to myself, but I just felt that something wasn't right. And, you know, these people were good people, you know, my Filipino neighbors were good people, but they were just, I just didn't think, God, these are my people. And I've never had the group of people that I've had that feeling with the most were Northern Europeans, that, oh, these people are the people that I share the most sensibilities with. And I think sensibilities is really the key thing. It's, you know, not IQ or anything like that. It's sensibilities. It's, you know, how you, I still can't even fully articulate it. I think once more science comes out.
That kind of links with what I said about it being a sort of attitudinal thing rather than values, for example. Like values are basically...
I think it's deeper than attitude. I think it's your sense of self, your sense of justice, your sense of morality, your sense of beauty. And, you know, you see someone else with a phenotype that corresponds with your genetic sensibilities and you just automatically recognize them as your people. Whereas you see someone of a alien phenotype and you just instinctively know that this person is an alien racially.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah,
that's just how it is. And that has to be accepted and understood.
Which doesn't mean that I hate them.
Right.
I just want to, for the sake of clarification, doesn't mean that I then want to beat that person up or, you know, whatever. It just means I feel they are different from me,
right?
Simple. I'm pretty sure they're feeling the same thing about me.
Well, see, this is why it's important for us to talk about these things, because if people can't talk about these things honestly and openly, then they're going to hate each other.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a lot of paranoia. If I feel this way about them, how are they feeling about me? Probably the same, maybe even worse. What are they going to do about it? eventually. So yeah, absolutely. And this is the whole problem. This is the source of the tension.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine a liberal saying, well, you've just said that you feel different from a black guy. Well, big deal. You know, we're all different from each other. So what's so bad about you feeling different, you know, snowflake? But look, this difference is very important, very salient in human affairs, because it leads to all sorts of, well, you know, war. So it is important. It's not just me being a snowflake or sensitive or whatever. It really is a very pertinent thing.
Well, the liberal is going to give you the gotcha. Well, white people went to war against each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like, okay, here's your gold star. Now piss off. Let the grown-ups speak now. I always just, I find it exasperating. By the way, somebody said in the live chat, well, the D-Life live chat, because what I said earlier, that we know what is meant by white people, like most people know. And this person has said, Bose, is Alexandra Dumas white? Now, I'd never heard of this person, so I've just Googled him, and he's rather strange-looking Frenchman from the 19th century, a huge round face, and it seems that he was a quarter black. So
I guess not. I mean, I don't guess not. He isn't.
Yeah,
that's not simple. I mean, I don't say that I'm white.
Yeah, so it's like, first of all, he doesn't even, I mean, he looks pretty unusual for a French guy. But yeah, once you get into the details, you discover he is indeed a quarter black. So I wouldn't say he's white. I'd say he's a quarter black. Now, that's not the end of the world, and it's not the end of the matter, right? That I wouldn't deport him or something, right? I just, for the sake of it. But I would think it'd be better if fewer people of that kind were created.
I agree. I don't think that, because that, you know, I don't want to dox my location, but there is a town not too far from me where it seems like, and this is just my perception, just going there throughout the years, it seems like 10% of the population is mulatto. So when I see that, and then I hear people in the dissident right, you know, or CivNath say, oh, well, people can just, you know, assimilate Latinos or something or whatever, you know, we'll just mix these people and we'll give them our culture. I'm thinking to myself, do you realize what you're going to lose? Because they don't see a timeline to this. And that's the big problem. Yes. They don't, most people just think in terms of the present, or if they live in a town or a state or a country that's majority white, you know, they don't have to experience going to a town where 10% of the population looks like Alexander Dumas or whatever his name is. You know, it's like, you don't understand what's at stake here. I'm a mixed race guy. Listen to me. All right. Listen to me. This is what's, you better be careful, you know, because I think that there needs to be like policy countermeasures against race mixing. I don't think it should be illegal. I don't think we should have like wig nat solutions where hoppers have to face the wall. That's a bit extreme, but I could laugh about it. But I just think that there has to be more dialogue and more understanding. And that's, you know, that's what I want as someone that is mixed race. And I think a lot of racially mixed people feel the way that I do and, you know, follow you. You'd be shocked how many mixed race people or non-white people watch your channel. You would be shocked.
I'm glad, because that means that I've articulated these issues mm-hmm. without scaring people off or, yes. you know, insulting them or whatever. So I'm glad about that. But it's also mm-hmm. gratifying to know that these issues are, that there are people out there who are open to discussing these things, even when these issues affect them personally. I think it's good. And incidentally, people can post questions for HAPA perspective on Entropy or on DLive. So if you do have things you'd like to ask him, some people have already posted questions. Actually, another HAPA has posted two questions. Right. Woodward's HAPA. So we'll get to mm-hmm. those in a while. But yeah, I think, again, my channel seems to attract these edge case, like it attracts art school types, and it seems to attract mixed race people as well. So it's a strange thing, but I'm not altogether surprised, because I try to approach these things in an open-minded fashion. So I think that's maybe what appeals to
me. You said a lot of, I remember last night you said a lot of broken people are in the movement. I was just thinking, oh, all those mixed race people.
You'd be surprised.
I don't consider myself broken though. I just thought it was funny because that's what I thought of.
Broken branch. No, I was thinking about I wasn't thinking about race at all.
No, I know. I'm just I would just threw that in there. I don't think mixed race people should view themselves as broken. I just thought that was funny.
Yes, indeed. Okay, someone's saying, can you ask Hath perspective how he feels about Elliot Rodger, which is straight in at the deep end question there. So take it away.
Okay, so yeah, I saw the whole thing about Elliot Rodgers when it happened, and I you know, he was really young, and I remember when I was his age, I didn't feel like murdering anyone, but I could feel that sort of. Because, you know, he was kind of an incel. And I think when you're a young man, your social value is a lot lower and you take things a lot more personally and you want things now. So there's this fear of missing out that a lot of young men have. So part of the problem with being racially mixed is you're a young man with all this confusion, but you have fewer role models that you can look up to. And given that his parents, you know, the type of people that would race mix, like the boomers, you know, his dad, I think it was his dad that had an Asian wife, you know, that kind of like is a red flag already that they probably weren't. They're probably the kind of people that, you know, and I was not saying this about all racially mixed couples, but they were probably the type of people that, they're probably just like unaware boomers. I don't know. They probably didn't have like the greatest instincts, you know. That would be my, and you know, he was in California. Like, California sucks.
I think you're right that from what I understand, they were fairly affluent, and they probably didn't even think about this stuff. I mean, this is the sort of cliche is that wealthy boomers who just don't think about what the meaning or the significance of things. It's just, I just have fun in the moment. And, you know, I fell in love with this girl. What do you expect me to do? Of course we had a kid, et cetera.
Well, you know, the sad thing is if Elliot Rodgers were alive today, he would probably have a blonde girlfriend by now. I'm pretty sure he would. I mean, he drove a nice car and everything.
Supreme gentleman.
Yeah.
He was, you're absolutely right though about how as a young man, it is very difficult to be a young to be a young man is just crap because women are not attracted to you. They're not interested. You've got the whole world bearing down upon you and judging you and requiring things off you, but you don't know exactly what it requires of you. You haven't you've got to forge your own path. So it's just awful. And I think that to be mixed race would be to add another dimension to that.
Yes, yes. And I'm familiar with that experience. But I really think that, you know, it certainly does add another dimension to it. But young men need guidance. This is why young men need guidance, because they need like an Uncle Vinny or something. I don't know. An older uncle or, you know, their father to be around and say, look, you know, just wait 10 years and you'll get exactly what you want.
Yeah, just calm down.
Yeah.
So, okay, here are the questions from Woodwose Happa, and that's Woes spelt Wose. Oh, and he's just posted another one as well. Okay, Happa males tend to do worse than Happa females in dating. Yes, so,
what do you say? First of all, it's easier to be a woman. And if, I mean, as long as you're attractive and, you know, Hapa women are, a lot of white guys like Asian and Hapa women. It's just a thing, which is why I think that if we're going to, you know, have nationalist policies in the future, they have to be flexible and allow for individual freedom because you're going to be dealing with these things, you know. I think that people should, I'm opening up too many conversational threads here, but I think that, you know, a lot of guys clearly like Hapa women. It's just a thing. I don't know.
It is. Yeah. I think that it tends to be the East Asian women are very thin, slim, slender, feminine, submissive, all the things that, you know, men tend to want women to be. So right. It's not surprising that, and also they look younger for longer, which is a, you know, shallow but very real and understandable concern for guys. So, of course, there's going to be a lot of that, of course there is, and I think it's a bit of a shame. Because, but again, white women have been so degraded by feminism and mm-hmm. warped, distorted that you. I think it's again. I don't think it's right. I wish it weren't the case, but I think it's understandable that a lot of guys end up going, especially before they get red pilled. You know, loads of guys just end up in East Asia teaching English. It seems to happen all the time. Yeah, it definitely is. Okay, so that's that. And he now asks, do you feel a sense of belonging with both of your white and your Asian side?
I wouldn't want anyone to consider me a white person in the sense that that would be setting a bad precedent. You know, I don't look at other Hoppas and think, oh, this is a white person. No thanks. But I do identify with white people, and I have white sensibilities much more so than Asian. For a lot of Hoppas, it's different. You know, some have more Asian sensibilities, or there are Hoppas that have no white ancestry because Hoppa just means half East Asian. But I don't know. I think with each case, it's different. But I feel a stronger affinity towards my European, my Anglo-Saxon ancestry.
All right. I did think so. There's someone in the live chat who I think is just causing trouble, and he's saying, Wolves, if it wasn't for the Arabs, there's a good argument that Northern Europe would still be a backwater. I find that rather hard to imagine. Here's the other question from Wood Wolves Hapa. Would you move into a Hapa ethnostate?
I would rather not. I'll just leave it. If others want to, that's fine. You know, I think that white people are my people, and that's just how I like things. Those are my sensibilities. If Hoppas want a Hoppa ethnostate, they can all move to like some island in Hawaii or something. That's cool.
Can hop a good time.
Hop a good time. There we go. It's hopping.
So all right, there were some other questions. Critiqued. Hello, Critiqued. He says, does affirmative action benefit you?
I wish. Nope. As it is, Asians are not even considered POC, so why Hoppas, you know, certainly
that,
not.
That came up in my
That's so unfair though, too, because you see like all these problems that Hoppas, like Elliot Rogers, had. There should be like an Elliot Rogers grant or something.
That's rather dark. The Supreme Award.
Supreme Award. Oh yeah, there you go.
That's all right. I don't want to trivialize it just for anyone who's watching from MI5 or whatever. I'm not trivializing this.
I give him the Hoppa card. It's all right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. There was another question, do you agree that East Asian people are more conformist than white people, and are they too conformist?
I would agree with that generally in the sense that, you know, the racial psychological or what did Kevin McDonald call it? I think Kevin McDonald is great. We'll just call it for now the racial psychological evolution, or the evolutionary psychology rather, of these races. So for 10,000 years, white people, over 10,000 years since prehistory, white people have had an evolutionary psychological strategy towards individualism, and that affected their mating process. That's the reason why white people are good looking generally, not always, but generally good looking, tall, strong, smart, creative, so on and so forth, because that's what they selected for through their individualistic mating practice for thousands and thousands and thousands of years of, you know, they were also the most monogamous race compared to all other races at any given point in time, all other contemporary races. Whereas what you find with non-Northern European races, according to Kevin McDonald, and I see this as being true, is that when you get into, like, you're talking about like Middle Eastern or Southern European or East Asian populations for many thousands of years, since before even Chinese civilization, they come from a more Neolithic farmer civilizations that were more ethnocentric, tribalistic, less individualistic, and their mating process was, you had more arranged marriages, more cousin marriages, marriages within a small tribe. So they were very tribalistic, and that's the reason why they're more ethnocentric and they're more conformist. So that would be my short answer. So,
right. One thing that came up earlier, I wanted to pick up on, was this idea that, and it does, because it came up in my stream with Jared Taylor this year, that Asians, I think that means specifically
East Asians, like, in the American context.
Yeah, yeah. Are no longer considered people of color in America.
They're not.
So is this because they basically they don't need help? They're as intelligent.
They
as
don't. White. Well, I would say, the thing about East Asians being as intelligent as whites, it's a very black and white kind of superficial understanding of IQ. East Asians, I think, on average, maybe have a higher visual spatial IQ, but whites have a higher abstract IQ. So whites are better with language and abstract thinking and philosophy. East Asians are, they have faster reaction times, and on average, they're not the best at it. There are white people with great visual spatial skills, obviously, but East Asians tend to have better visual spatial skills. But other than that, I think with white people, you get more variety. But anyway, I digress. I think that...
No, it's not a digression. It's interesting. I find this quite...
I'm trying to answer your question, though. Your question was... what was your question?
I've forgotten. So they're not regarded as people of color.
Yes, they're not regarded as people of color. So it's weird because I remember, a decade ago reading articles about how the left was upset that with the most common interracial couple was a white man with an East Asian woman, and that they regarded this as white supremacy. So,
but of course, in advertising, let's just say it for the sake of it. I know everyone says this, everyone points this out, but it's just so ridiculous that the most common thing is it's always a black guy and a white blonde woman every fucking time. Right. But of course, that's more plausible, though, than I have seen like a black woman with a white guy, and it's like, come on. I mean, how often do you see that in real life? But anyway, that is a digression. So sorry, I shouldn't have said.
No, that's interesting too. So there's different things. I think when you see a white guy with a black woman, the relationship is more sexual. That's the difference, because you can look at someone from another race and think, oh, that person's good looking, but it's harder to see them as being like living with that person, because the sensibilities are an issue, and what do you want your children to look like, and you want to wake up to this person every morning for several decades, So,
and who wears the trousers in the relationship? I can imagine there being a power struggle there.
So, like, when I think, like, when white guys are with Asian women, I think it's more of a sexual thing. They're thinking more in just in their impulses, but. But anyway, I digress. I think that, so are Asian people of color? It depends on the situation, according to the left. They go back and forth. They're always moving the goalpost. But generally, I would say in recent years, generally not. And I know that a lot of Asian rights activists have problems with this. And my message to them is, well, maybe you need to listen to the right.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Of course they do. This is something where I think only the identitarian right or the alt-right, the dissent right can answer this.
Yeah.
Because, there must be East Asians in America who are thinking, well, hold on, we're obviously more intelligent. Why are we being disadvantaged now than certain other peoples? Because they're far more I think they're far more realistic about this stuff than white people are. So they're probably thinking, well, why aren't we getting into the gifted programs at school? Why aren't we getting into the top universities? We're being artificially held down. It must be rather a rude awakening for them.
Well, you know, the problem for East Asians in the West is that a lot of the racial groups that come into Northern European derived nations, we'll say, you know, like America, Canada, Europe, they're the most extreme minority. You have more, like in America, there's more Black and Latino people. So East Asians, they can't get enough representation because they're the smallest minority. So their voice just isn't as loud, and they complain about it. But, you know, my thinking is, well, gosh, you know, that's stupid, because, you know, this is part and parcel of being a minority, is that you're not going to have as much of a say, because they complain about like not getting enough representation in Hollywood. Well, of course not. How much representation do white people have in, you know, Chinese cinema?
Yeah, they don't. Or in Hollywood for that matter.
Or even in Hollywood now, but surely. But you know, you can imagine like Bollywood, you know, of course the majority of, you know, the actors are going to be Indian, and the politics of India are majority Indian. I don't know if there's a small white population in India, but I'm just kind of using that for the sake of argument.
See, someone's just said that in Uppsala, Sweden, he was in IKEA last week and he saw 14 mixed race couples in 1 hour, where it was a white guy with a younger East Asian woman. And, you know, fuck, I mean, this is the result of a feminist culture where the young women, the young Swedish women, must be just insufferable with the leftism and the feminism and everything. So the guys end up just getting a mail order bride, basically.
Well, I don't know if I can say this, but feminism is white genocide.
Yeah, you can say it. I mean, I agree with you. I think it's a tool designed,
yes,
to do this to us.
And, you know, and the obesity epidemic, but that's a whole other thing. You know, it's more of an American thing, but I think it'll make its way to Europe, unfortunately. But yeah, there are so many things going on. So, you know, the big problem with white people is, you know, that they're more individualistic. So they're more likely to virtue signal. And they've been this way since like 10,000 BC, because, you know, they're descended from Indo-Europeans and Western hunter-gatherers, these ancient Proto-Indo-European, these ancient Proto-European populations that became what we know as today of, you know, as Northern Europeans. And, you know, there's growing consensus on this, that they've always been virtue signalers. They've always been the moral race. And it's more important for them to show that they're moral because they're more individualistic. And there's a link between the two. I mean, they just go hand in hand. If you're going to have an individualistic society, they have to show that they're good people by being moral. Whereas an ethnocentric race doesn't have to do that. They can just, give preference to their, you know, their extended family. It's easy.
Clannishness.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. It's one of those things that's quite difficult to grasp, because for white people, it just goes, I think it's just obvious that you want to be a good person and you want other people to know that you are a good person, that you're a moral person. It's just unthinkable that you would be any other, you wouldn't care about whether other people thought well of you. It's just unthinkable for a white person to be like that. You'd have to be some kind of psychopath that just didn't give a shit about what other people thought. And
that's the norm towards out groups. That's the norm in other races. I mean,
it's just incredible, but it does get you to that. I mean, it explains why we have this idea that we have to please other races, like why white people feel like that we've got to do well by them. We've got to do them favors and stuff because otherwise they'll think we're bad people. You'll feel that we're bad people.
I was going to say. That's what it is. And, you know, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. This individualism and how it's affected the, because, you know, white people are into meritocracy, and meritocracy has influenced their mating strategy, which has led to them, again, being strong, good-looking, intelligent, creative people. That's the reason why. It's the double-edged sword of individualism. So, you know, liberalism didn't start with the Enlightenment. It started with the Stone Age, you know, and these Western hunter-gatherer groups, you know, they couldn't, because of the climate of Northern Europe, they couldn't just dominate a single territory. They had to move around and work with other Northern European tribes, and then they had these complex societies. And, you know, this is something Kevin MacDonald, that's where I learned it from, is Kevin MacDonald in his recent book. But I don't think he's the best at selling his own material. He's a lot more knowledgeable and intelligent than he lets on to when he does interviews. And he talks about, you know, the evolutionary psychology of Europeans, and especially Northwestern Europeans. And that's really what it is, you know, the Indo-Europeans too, they were pastoralists that had this permeable martial aristocracy that was very meritocratic. You know, it's all about meritocracy. So everything from the social justice movement, which is like a secular Puritanism, to the libertarian movement, which is all about meritocracy and individualism. I mean, there's nothing whiter than a libertarian convention. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's the whitest thing ever.
Yes. Well, that was maybe a Doctor Who convention might be whiter.
That's okay, maybe.
But yeah, there's a big joke about libertarianism was always that it seems to be a very white thing, and yet you've got all these white guys involved in it claiming to be race blind, and that it just doesn't matter, and why would you ever care about, and why would you lower yourself to ethnic collectivism? But they're only speaking to other white guys.
Yeah, exactly. Look around the room, idiot.
It's hilarious, but it's not hilarious because it's scary, because
yeah,
that mentality is fine if you are in an environment where there are only other white people. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up to be eaten alive by other groups, because you're saying, oh, I don't care about my group, I'll just fight as an individual. You're doing the Jordan Peterson thing.
It's worse than that.
All the other groups are thinking, hey, easy pickings here.
Yeah, they don't even think about it. It just happens. It's just, you know, they're visceral. I don't think they even think about it. It just, they're just running on their instincts. And it's just incredible that you, like, libertarians need to, if they want libertarianism, they have to become race realists. Because, you know, I believe that, you know, people, again, we're going back to what Lawrence Southern said. Well, what is white? And my answer is, well, what is culture? And if we're talking about like political sensibilities, race is the foundation for culture. And I know that, you know, people are sick of talking about race and they don't want to sound shrill and everything. I get it. But, you know, race isn't everything, but it's the foundation for everything. You know, if you want to build a house that's going to stand, it has to have the right foundation. And that's really what race is.
Yeah, I agree. It is a very important, a crucial part of life. And I don't think anyone, even on the left, would deny that. Because they go on about race all the time as well. The only people who would deny it are the centrists. They're the only people who would actually say, oh, race just doesn't matter and shouldn't matter. It only matters because we keep choosing to care about it. If we choose to not care about it, then, you know, we can make ourselves totally vulnerable to outside groups.
Saying that race is a social construct is like saying you can build, you know, Eiffel Tower on mud or something.
Of course, the left will say that, but then they still go on and on about race as a reality. I mean, they still talk about white supremacy, white privilege, white whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they say it's, I mean, this is one of the big, big contradictions in the left, that, you know, they'll say they want equality, but then they treat everyone unequally. You know, the left is insane. The left is just utterly mad at this point.
Well, it depends on what type of leftists we're talking about, you know, either, because a lot of the white ones, of course, are the secular Puritans, you know, Northern Europeans that are virtue signaling, as they always have for 10,000 years, or, you know, the tribe who they know what they're doing. But that's, you know...
Yeah, that's another
discussion. Yeah.
don't worry. There was a question I wanted to... Oh, yeah. Please ask him what he thinks of Nick Fuentes and America First. For some reason, this keeps... I think this is the third or fourth stream where people have asked me to ask the guest about Nick Fuentes in America First. So go for it if you want.
I wouldn't have any problem with him, but my big problem with Nick Fuentes and the American First movement is that they punch right, and I don't like that. If they didn't do that, you know, I could forgive a lot of the, you know, nationalism light that they're espousing. I think that generally their movement is a good thing, but the reason I would criticize them is that they punch right, and you know, I don't think they draw a hard line with race, and maybe they can't for optical reasons. Okay, I understand that. Just don't punch right.
Yeah, I agree. That has always been a problem with Nick Fuentes, especially that he, and I think he's now spread this mentality to his followers that,
yes,
that sort of cult-like mentality. Although where we'll everyone else, we'll just disparage everyone else.
I would like to add one thing real quick. You'll notice, like, you know about the Protestant Catholic divide in Europe, and there were racial undertones to that, and that the Catholics tended to have more Southern European sensibilities. And a lot of these American First types, like Nick Fuentes and his followers, it seems like to me, I could be wrong, it seems like they tend to be have more Mediterranean sensibilities, you know, whereas yourself and the people on Millennial tend to be more of Northern European stock. So it could be like sort of an internal struggle between former Protestants and former Catholics or trad Catholics.
Actually, it's funny because two people who I think are very Northern Europe, like Faust, who appeared on Millennial, and also Semi Ogog, who I think is very Northern European, both of them have blamed my sense of humor on my Italian quarter. They both said that you have a sort of anarchic Italian sense of humor. I don't think that's necessarily true, but whatever. They both said it to me.
Not enough pizza jokes.
Okay, there's another question here for you. What would HAPA Perspective do in a collapse scenario, such a situation would increase white ethnocentrism, possibly to the point of making them anti-HAPA?
That's why I'm trying to get my name out there.
All right. I can understand. I mean,
just in case, guys.
Well, do you think that's? I mean, I think we can freely talk about this since we're not
sure,
on YouTube.
Absolutely.
Do you see a situation like that on the horizon in America?
You know, one of the sad things about whites becoming a minority, or you know, their numbers rapidly decreasing and become a global minority, is that it will force them to become more ethnocentric. Now, if you're against racism, especially white people being racism, you would want them to be a healthy majority in their respective countries, wouldn't you? Because naturally, any population, if they feel cornered, they're going to act like cornered animals, and rightfully so. Rightfully so. That being said, I think given my appearance, you know, I have a full beard, and you know, I don't know, I kind of look like Keanu Reeves, so you know, maybe they'll think I'm Keanu Reeves. I don't know. You know, given the way that I talk, I think people that have resentment towards whites, you know, they should really look out. They're going to be in trouble. But I feel confident that I hope that the white people would be accepting of me because I love white people.
Yes, I hope so. Okay, here's a question. Well, actually, do you want to go further into that about, you know, is America heading for a race war?
My prediction for 2020. I knew this was coming up. All right. So I don't think that we're going to explicitly have a race war, but I think, you know, like you look at the division between Democrats and Republicans, and it's like implicitly kind of racial, but there are a lot of white Democrats. I think if there were a civil war in America, it would be just like that. And, you know, one side would have more diversity than the other, but there would be diversity on both sides, and it wouldn't explicitly be a race war, but it would be, you know, conservative. I think there is going to be a conflict in America very soon, you know, within the next couple of years. I mean, that's my guess. I don't have a crystal ball, but it will be rural majority white versus urbanites. I think that's going to be the, because that's the political divide. And, you know, the political situation is so unstable. There's no way we're going to just like last a couple more years and make it to the next election. I don't think that's going to happen. I think, you know, things are going to get worse. It might not be a civil war, but my thinking is it probably will be.
Within the next 4 years?
Yes, probably sooner than that.
All right. See, for me, everything hinges on this election. And I'm guessing you sound like you're resigned to Trump not getting in. He's out. Is that right?
I don't know. Either way, I mean, if Trump wins, then the silver line is that I'm not thrilled with Trump. I did vote for him. I'm not thrilled with him. Obviously, I didn't like his platinum plan. But, I think if he wins, the silver lining is that the liberals will, you'll see the most massive chimp out ever. If Biden wins, then, you know, maybe these QAnon people and conservatives will, you know, they'll do their thing, and who knows what will happen. But the situation isn't stable. So it seems like America's, there's so much tension already. It's just headed towards a major conflict. Because you have this division between two sides, and they're not going to settle.
It does seem like that. I mean, the left are just berserk. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're getting away with blue murder almost literally.
Yeah,
over the last year or so, it's just been incredible, really. And it really to watch it from outside, it's like. It's like you can open a box and see lots of explosions happening inside. You know that whenever I literally look into America, it's like fucking hell, what's going on now?
The happenings are here, and I think the fate of the West will be determined here. But strangely, I'm optimistic. This dysfunction is sort of going to lead to a lot of white pills. You know.
Yeah. I think through, you know, there's an expression like through adversity comes strength or something, comes wisdom. I think that is going to be the course here. Could you put on headphones by any chance?
Because I do have. I'm sorry. I do have headphones on.
Thank you.
Maybe I should mute my microphone when you're talking.
That would be helpful.
Okay.
Okay. I can just hear my own echo. It's a bit distracting. Okay, so here's a question. What are your thoughts on the release of the new game Cyberpunk 2077? And I think the guy said the release of your new game, but I think that might be a typo or he's joking in some way. What are the thoughts on the game Cyberpunk 2077? Oh, it's because of Keanu, isn't it? That's what the joke is, right?
I haven't looked. I am a gamer, but I haven't looked into Cyberpunk. I'm into like Bannerlord and like I love strategy games. I love war game. You know, I that's my vice is gaming.
Did you, because you're a similar age to me, did you ever play Lemmings?
I did.
I just love Lemmings. There's such a place in my heart for that game. Did we talk about this before we went on air? I think we did.
No, we didn't.
Right, okay. Must have been...
Very cool game.
It was David McMurdo I spoke to about this before we went on air. I'm getting mixed up. I just love Lemmings. And, you know, I always assumed that it was Japanese, but actually it was entirely British. It was all British like programmers, and even the music was made by a British composer. Synth guy. And I love Lemmings. I think it's just a fantastic premise for a game. But I just wanted to ask that as an aside. I don't want to get into the topic of video games, because what tends to happen is people are so into video games that once you get into that topic, you never get out of it again. So that's what we've asked about Cyberpunk 2077. That's fine. I thought that your avatar wasn't from that. I thought it was, what was the one he did? Constantine or something?
It's like John Wick or something.
Right. Okay. All right. Here's another question. This is from Eki Lux. I've heard that mixed-race people tend towards civic nationalism because they want a place in America. Do you think that mixed-race people might feel... it's not just they want a place in America. You know, mixed-race people tend towards civic nationalism everywhere because they want to stay in white countries or historically white countries. So he's asking, do you think that mixed race people might feel cornered, might feel cornered, given the left attacking and the right defending? I'm not sure what he means.
Well, is there more to the question?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's it. I'm just trying to understand it. Do you think that mixed race people might feel cornered, given the left attacking and the right defending? Yeah, that's the question. I'm not sure what he means.
Well, let me answer that as best as I can. I have noticed it seems like a lot of like some race mixed people would tend towards or feel more favorable of they would espouse civic nationalism, and it's rational in the sense if they're just thinking of themselves. But if you want access to white people, it's not sustainable. It's not a good long-term solution to support civic nationalism, because there goes the white people. You know, if you like milk, don't you want more cows? That's been my thinking. So I can't support civic nationalism. I want access to white people. I'm not white. So my solution is I support more cows because I like milk. That would be my analogy.
All right. And there's another question. Okay, is elaborated. The left will attack all races, and the right will be implicitly white nationalist. They will. So then, mixed race people will get defensive, and also white people will get defensive and hostile towards non-whites, including mixed race. But the left will attack all races. I think that the left. I'll just put my own thoughts in here. They might not be connected, but here's what you've made me think about. I think that the left favors mixed race people because they just by definition they're going to be far less given towards ethnic nationalism of any kind. So if they're going to be, I mean, most likely they'll be attached to civic nationalism or just no nationalism, so just globalism, because for obvious reasons. The only kind of nationalism that they might gravitate to in great numbers is like mixed race Hapa nationalism and so on. But we're nowhere near that happening yet. I mean, that's like generation, like a few generations away before that becomes
I think Hapa nationalism is retarded. Hapas are not a race. They're not a people. They're not a proper race. When I think of race, I think of not just a major branch off the human tree, but human beings that are the product of tens of thousands of years of natural selection. Hapas are not that. You know, we're the product of international transportation and just individuals falling in love, you know, in a cosmopolitan society. There's probably less than a million Hapas in the world anyway. I think that what I'm trying to do is provide more dialogue and understanding and, you know, ways for people that are non-white and especially mixed race to understand what's going on and understand white nationalism and, you know, for them to have a dialogue, you know, to have the right dialectic and understanding to get along with and work with and even be included in a, you know, maybe a potential white ethno state for everyone to be able to have real compromise, not shitty. See, compromise is like a dirty word because white people have been screwed over so much, but I think real compromise can be had. And I write about that in my blog. I think there was one post that you really liked. I think that whites should be a supermajority in their respective countries. But in order to achieve that, in order to reverse the demographic trends, you don't have to take away people's individual rights. I don't think that's necessary. I think there are real economic policies that can, you know, within a few generations can really reverse things.
Well, I certainly hope so. Okay, here's another question. There seems to be an emergent South Asian overclass colonizing Western technology firms and political parties. Do you have any thoughts on how Hapas and East Asians view the ascent of South Asians, Hindus, Sikhs, and Tamils in the West?
I don't know anything about that. What I do know is that, you know, and this just attests to the importance of race, really, is that, you know, the Chinese are the sort of like quintessential originators of Northeast Asian culture. I mean, you know, the Japanese and the Koreans are derived from Sino culture, from, you know, the Chinese, and, you know, the Han Chinese are really dominating Southeast Asia. So a lot of what you'll find is like most well-to-do people in Singapore and the Philippines tend to be Han Chinese. So they're kind of like the tribe of the East. You know, and that's my ancestry. So I don't know if I should take pride in that or not. But
someone said the plan is, and this was relating to what we were saying before about, someone said the plan is to destroy all majorities, ethnic, cultural, racial, and even religious, and even national. And I think that's true because then you end up with, you know, divide and conquer and complete chaos over which, well, the only solution is some kind of police state. I think that's what the globalists, by which I mean literally, like, I'm not using that as a euphemism or anything. I think that's what they're aiming for. I think they want every country, not just in the West, but ideally every country in the world, to be a chaotic, goddamned mess where people want a police state. They want totalitarianism because that's the only way you can have stability. What would you say about that?
Well, I've sometimes been accused of being like a libertarian or something, but, you know, one of many reasons why I would prefer to live in a country with a white supermajority is because, you know, when I see authoritarianism, to me, I see that as a form of government that's more suited to like third world populations. I believe that Northern Europeans, you know, they should have the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. They're capable of self-governance because of their moral nature. And they deserve that. You know, they are, just as their Indo-European ancestors, they are the aristocratic individuals. And that's the ideal society that I want to live in. I don't want to live in an authoritarian right wing, you know, version of North Korea that's like all white or something. I want a white country like America, but free and, you know, gun rights and everything. But anyway, that aside, I digress.
I don't know. I think you're right though, just to sort of intervene. I think you're right that, totalitarianism isn't really, definitely with the Anglos, it's just not something that we're at home with. And I think that Sargon is correct when he says this kind of thing, that we tend to, the idea that we've all got to subscribe to certain ideas wholeheartedly is just anathema to, there is not a sort of an English way of thinking that is universal to all English people. But of course, he runs into problems there because then he relies on civic values and people adopting them. So it's a bit of a contradiction. But I think he is correct to say that totalitarianism isn't something that's ideal for Northern Europeans. I think even in the case of the Third Reich, as far as I understand it, they didn't even intend that to be a permanent condition. They wanted to ease up after a few decades. It was supposed to be a sort of emergency condition, as I understand it, but I might be wrong about that.
Well, given my interests, I don't know how much I can talk about it. You know, the Third Reich expanded gun rights, and you know, I think that, you know, that's what I would like, something I'd like to see more of. You know, that's kind of another thing, but we won't get into that. But yeah, I what I always say is, you know, one of my quotes is fewer whites, fewer rights.
All right. Yeah, I think that's generally the case. That it seems to be worldwide, that is how it plays out. Okay, so there's, I thought there was another question. I had another question stored up somewhere here. It's a bit messy working between entropy and D-Life, but nonetheless. Someone says this this is a bit blunt, but this person says, this HAPA piece of shit just wants access to white women. What would you say to that?
I would say that I want more white women, and I want them to be white. And if a white girl likes me, I'm not going to say no. I'm not that much of a cuck. I mean, I've only ever dated white women. I mean, you know, as someone else has said to me, it's like an endless conundrum. You know, what type of women are you going to date? I think, you know, I don't think this, like, you know, this race mixing where you see, like, promoted. I don't think it should be advertised or promoted. But I think, you know, as long as you have policies that the government gives money to large white families, that would be a way an effective way of countering race mixing without having to take away people's individual rights. So, you know, if we have an economic policy where, let's say, you want to have a family with your girlfriend, Woes, you know, you would get money from the government, you know, provided you don't have a criminal record, you're a good person. You could afford to have 15 kids and, you know, have on a single income or something. And now, whereas I wouldn't, and I would be fine with that. That's, you know, something I came up with. You know, I think we do have to preserve the white race. Funny to hear that from a mixed race guy, but but I don't want to lose my individual freedom as well. But I think we can have the best of both worlds. If we have smart people, because here's the thing, right? The type of person that would think that way, that would ask that kind of question, the mistake they're making is, you know, their only tool is a hammer, right? And if all you have is a hammer, every problem is a nail. You know, they're bringing a sledgehammer to a problem that I believe requires a scalpel.
Yeah. And someone's saying that your children with a white woman would be a quarter Asian and three quarters white. And at that point, I mean, you know, if we had, you know, the ability to start afresh, I would rather that everyone was white in European countries, and that was it. But we're not starting from that point. This is the problem. This is something that we have to address. So, and I think we have to live with. And again, it's not ideal. It's not what I would want, but it is the situation.
If I can just cut in there, if I could be the dictator somehow of, like, the entire West, or, you know, if you just look at my blog, you know, you can link to my post. If this policy became more popular that I came up with, I don't know. I mean, I'm not like a policy maker. I just kind of wrote it up because I was thinking about these questions. And, you know, being a mixed race guy, I kind of have to answer this stuff. I think inevitably, you know, the non-white genes would be whitewashed out.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I think people are sort of broadly on your side in this. I wasn't actually sure what your position on this was. I had a memory of you saying, it must have been someone else, but I had a memory of you saying that you only date HAPA women. But
No, I only date white women. Sorry, okay. Guys.
I must have got you mixed up with a different HAPA. So I apologize.
I mean, good luck finding if you're a HAPA, good luck finding a HAPA woman, because the white guys took them all.
Right. Well, there you go. I mean, this is the reality of the world that we live in now, in the society that we live in. Again, it's not ideal. It's not nice. But I can understand your position here. So, yeah. Well, are there any other questions for HAPA Perspective before we wrap up? Because we have gone for an hour and 8 minutes now. Someone's saying, Nia Hawa, where the white women's at?
That's hilarious.
And someone says, small dating pool, only HAPA women. Yeah, most white men have become slut makers, as JLP says. Yeah, well, there you go. All right, chat seething. Yeah, there are some people who are quite angry. I mean, I can understand it. And I just think this is a reality that we live in now. And it's not ideal. There's nothing else I can say about that.
I'm sorry that they're seething. But, you know, everything that I advocate for, the end result would be a white supermajority and a whiter, you know, a whiter Europe, a whiter America. That's what I support. And I think that there are ways to accomplish that without taking away people's individual rights. And, you know, my idea is that the non-white people living in a white ethno state would essentially, you know, we all pay taxes, but their money would go to these, you know, large white families. As long as you have a core pure white population that is expanding, then you're fine. Everybody else is just going to get whitewashed out.
Yes, over time, of course.
Absolutely. And it's happened. I mean, there's precedent for it, you know.
Yeah. All right. So before we end, what would you say about if someone were to ask you, what is so good about, well, why should white people be preserved? Why should the white race be preserved? Now, obviously, there is the matter of it should be preserved simply because it is an existing thing, an entry in the taxonomic encyclopedia of life on Earth. But what are the special qualities of European people that you value?
I think that they're a more eugenic race, given that they were their individualistic mating habits at this point. They're the most eugenic race on Earth. So, you know, take what you will from that, you know, the smartest, the strongest, the best looking, so on and so forth. I mean, they're just the people that I feel more attracted to. And I think that they're more attractive people because, you know, they're the most eugenic. You know, it's like you've got something that's just, I mean, this is going to sound white supremacist. It's just better, I think. You know, I would rather white people inherit more of the earth than the Chinese. And I say that as someone that's half Chinese. And I don't hate Chinese people, but, you know, I mean, God forbid if the Chinese, you know, take over the planet. We're in deep shit. Excuse my language.
That's all right. Okay, well, let's leave it at that. So this was half a perspective. Did it? Are you more relaxed now than you were at the start? Do you feel it's gone okay?
I think it has. I'm sorry that the chat. I hope the chat still isn't seething. I really
no. I think they're.
If there's anything I can say to help them understand what I think, I don't know. Do they still want me to face the wall? I mean,
I forgot about DLive the DLive questions. Hold on a minute. Okay, someone said, I don't know what this was relating to, but he donated a diamond and said, greedy something landlords. So that's very good. And then someone else donated a diamond and said, separation. And then, someone asked, donated a diamond and asked, is your father white or is it your mother?
Actually, it's my mother that's white and my father that's East Asian.
Right, okay. Is that unusual?
It is unusual. It is.
Mm. Yeah, it seems not the typical thing. Okay, and someone asked, what do you think of Scottish independence? I made videos at the time in 2014 about that matter. I might have had to take some of them down, maybe for tactical reasons. I can't remember now. But it's a different... It's a matter that doesn't really fit into this stream, but you can look at my video. They'll be on BitChute in January if they're not there already. Someone says, someone donated a diamond and put a love heart in. Thank you very much. Someone asked if I've read Going Free. No, I haven't. Someone said, we are fighting for our children and their future. Yes, we are. And someone asked, what does this gent predict for 2021? But you kind of went into that already.
I think that there's going to be a lot of heated conflict. And, you know, I think it'll be a good thing if there's some kind of collapse, for lack of a better way of articulating it, because that will, you know, that will be the reset that we want. That'll be the chance for us to have political opportunity if there's like balkanization.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, okay, let's leave it at that then. So thank you very much, Half a Perspective, for appearing on Millennial 2020.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. I'll be back in 40 minutes with Mike Enoch. So I'm sure there are lots of people will be looking forward to that. I'll see you then. In the meantime, thanks for watching. Bye for now.